Good morning, everybody. We might start and let people trickle in. Good morning, everyone. My name's Jax Brown. My pronouns are he and they. And I'm the resource development lead. So I organize sessions like this one for you here at the Disability Advocacy Resource Unit. Welcome to this Adventure Advocacy Practice session. It's really wonderful to have you with us this morning. Before we kick off today's session, I'd like to acknowledge that I'm on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and pay my deep and ongoing respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging. And I'd also like to pay my respects to any other Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are joining us today. So, a little bit of housekeeping. We encourage your active engagement with today's session, so please ensure that you put your questions in the Q&A box, and we'll be monitoring this behind the scenes and we'll facilitate a Q&A for you at the end of the presentations. So if you click on the tab at the top, titled Simone's screen, you can see me, and the PowerPoints at the same time. You can also enable captions by clicking more, and which is the three little dots down the bottom of your screen, and then clicking show captions. The slides and the links and the resources, as well as this recording, will be available after today's session as well, and I'll upload them to the Daru website and send all those things out to you. So why are we undertaking today's session? Well, we know that disability advocates undertake vital work for people with disabilities, upholding our rights and our accesses to services and supports. And yet disability advocacy services really remain stretched and drastically underfunded in Victoria as well as nationally. So having a session like this one where we can develop and hone our skills in how to write successful grants can provide you with really vital funding to sustain and extend the capacity of your organisation. So today we're joined by Simone from People with Disabilities Australia and Sue from the National Disability Research Partnership. And our focus, as I said, is really in upskilling you in how to seek out grants, work out if they're a good fit for your organisation, think about how you might build key partnerships and write grants with confidence and purpose. Okay, without further ado, I'll hand over to you, Simone.
Thank you so much, Jax. Simone speaking. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us today for this session. Just go to my next slide. So before I start, I would also like to acknowledge that I'm meeting on the lands of the Dharawal people today, and I pay my respects to this land and its people and to elders past and present. And I also acknowledge that respect to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people present today in the session. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. And on the screen there is an image of an artwork that PWDA commissioned by Paul Constable Calcott, a Wiradjuri elder and PWDA member. And this artwork actually hangs in our PWDA offices in Surry Hills as well. So just a little bit about who we are, PWDA, before I start. So PWDA is Australia's national peak disability rights and advocacy organisation. We're a cross-disability organisation, which means we represent the interests of all people with disability, and we're made up and led by people with disability as well. So we're a non-profit, and we work both nationally and internationally as well. My name is Simone Tunbridge. I'm the Director of Strategic Projects and Training at People with Disability Australia, and I've been there now about a year and a half, and yeah, really, really enjoying working there. So what I'll be talking about today, I'll be covering things like how to choose the right grants or how we go about it. So sharing some of the things that we've picked up along the way and some of our knowledge with you today around that, about how we choose the right grants and identify opportunities that are the right fit. We also think about how we align our funding with our organisational goals as well. A little bit about building organisational capacity and developing partnerships. They're really important as well, and they can strengthen grants. How we embed co-design and also how we budget for accessibility and inclusion as well. And as Jax mentioned, if you have any questions along the way, if you pop them in the Q&A, that that's great as well. We can get to those. So what I wanted to start with is why strategy matters. And I think that sometimes we can see grant opportunities come up and we can be reactive. So we can see grant opportunity and then we immediately start thinking about how we can develop a project that can fit that grant. So that is a way that you can do it. But another way is thinking about your priorities and the things that you're already hearing, and then aligning those to the grant or looking for grants that support your priorities and your goals. So we found that our strongest and most successful grant opportunities have been things that have been connected to community need. So things that we've already heard from our members, organisations that we work with, and clients as well. Things that are aligned to our organisational priorities and our strategic priorities. Things where we already have existing expertise that we can build on or continue to build. Grants that allow us to develop strategic partnerships. And a big one, and something that I think about a lot, is long-term impact. So looking at grants that support not only delivering one project, but also what can come from it long term. So as I mentioned, a grant opportunity may introduce a new idea, and that's okay as well, because funders, they often identify those emerging issues or gaps, and that can lead to opportunities that you as an organization may not have yet considered. So reading a grant opportunity can prompt us to think a little bit differently about how we approach something, and that's great. So the key idea isn't really about where it comes from. It's about whether after you've explored it, whether it aligns with your purposes, your values, and your expertise as well. And really importantly, the needs of your community and your members as well, if you have members, is important as well. So in choosing the right grants, not every grant is worth pursuing. And I know I'm probably saying things that you know here, that every application takes a lot of time and energy and resources, and they can take hours and hours of work. And I think that's why it's important to be somewhat selective. So before we commit to a grant application or apply, we ask ourselves some questions, and I'll share those with you on the next slide. But we think about the time and the resources that would be required. As I mentioned before, whether it fits our purpose and aligns with our values, whether we're well placed to deliver it, whether it creates meaningful impact. That's something that's really important to me, is impact and what impact it can create. What the opportunity might cost if we pull our focus from other priorities. So as I mentioned, it takes a long time to put a grant application together. So we think about, well, if we spend a lot of time putting this together, where might we be pulling our resources from in other places we need it? And something as well as attending information sessions on the grant opportunities. So a lot of the time, when a grant is announced, they will also put forward an information session. And they're really great to go to as well. You can get some great information in those sessions as well. And saying no to the wrong grant creates space to pursue the right one. So sometimes when we look at a grant, the answer is yes. Sometimes it's not right now, and sometimes it's no. So it's about being selective and knowing where you can focus your energy on, with the most, genuinely positioned place for success there. So these are some questions that we ask. This slide reflects the kind of conversations that we have when we're looking at grant applications. And honestly, even just spending, 15 minutes discussing this or thinking about this, can really help you figure out which ones are worth pursuing and which ones might not be the right fit. So the first thing that we think about is eligibility, and do we meet the mandatory requirements? And I applied for a grant recently that unfortunately we weren't successful in. And the general feedback that they sent back like group feedback, and they said that there was such a large number of applications that were just ruled out because they didn't meet the mandatory requirements. So that's really the first thing thinking about, is do you meet those requirements first off? And then we look at strategic fit. So does it align with our purpose and our priorities? Is this a good fit for us? Linked to that is our capacity. Do we have the people, the systems, and the expertise? If not, what would we need to do to make that work? Would we need more resources? Would we need to develop additional expertise? Do we need different systems? Then we think about community need. So what evidence tells us this is needed? And if you can include things like this in your grant application, it really strengthens it. So an example of that is We applied for a grant through the multi-year partnership primary prevention grant program, and we were successful. And something we were able to include was the community need. So we had a lot of emails from our members, and we had a lot of communications with members. We found a lot of research that said that primary prevention is really important in the disability space, and we were able to show that, and we were able to show that we could deliver that to our members and have meaningful impact. So anything you can develop around community need is important. And then all of our projects are around use co-design. So thinking about how will people with disability shape the project and in a meaningful way. And I'll go into some of these in more detail in the next slide. But yeah, we think about how can we co-design there. Partnerships, so who should be involved and why? And this is really great to think about at the start, because something else that really strengthens your applications is having letters of support from partners. And those kind of things can take time to get together. So thinking about good partners and who should be involved and why. So, not just having someone involved for the sake of it, but, what can they meaningfully contribute? And then sustainability. So once the funding ends, what kind of things can remain? How can we keep this going once we're not being funded anymore for the delivery of that project? So if I go into detail on some of those, so building capacity, I wanted to touch on this because something great that comes out of grants and something we like to show is how the grant can also build our capacity as well. So, a successful grant can build your expertise and capability as an organization. You can develop resources and tools and improve your systems and processes. It can help you to strengthen partnerships and increase your credibility and also create future opportunities. And on the screen is two images from Building Access, which is a project we run at PWDA. And through that, we developed toolkits and easy read resources. And so those resources exist and continue even when the funding is finished. If that happens, when that happens, we still have those resources and tools, and they can be used across other work that we do as well. They are accessed by people who aren't direct recipients of the workshops that we run as part of that project as well. Through that project, we're able to strengthen partnerships. We've made some really fantastic partnerships, and that has led us to future opportunities. So we've been able to use the partnerships from Building Access in grant applications for other projects that have helped us secure those as well. So as you get grants, you can build your capability, and then that capability can help you in future applications as well. So looking through grants, looking at grants through that capacity building lens as well can be really useful too. So as I've spoken about a little bit, partnerships can allow organizations to bring different strengths and perspectives and community connections. So it can really, really strengthen your applications, and also, if successful, the project delivery as well. I think no single organization can be everything to everyone sometimes. So it doesn't mean that you have to have a partner for every grant opportunity you apply for. You don't, but it is good to think about where you can collaborate with other organizations as well. And so if you have strong partnerships, it means that you can share and bring together complementary expertise. You can also extend your community reach. So these are all things that you can highlight in your application. It can strengthen credibility and improve outcomes. I think this one's really interesting in reducing duplication. I've been to a couple of different discussions around grants and funding, and I've heard a lot of people talking about the idea of reducing duplication. So, working out how can people work together and how can organizations work together instead of duplicating what each other are doing. So I think that's a really interesting one to explore as well. Having a good partner can increase sustainability and also create opportunities to learn from and support one another. And as I was talking about, building those stronger sector relationships as well that I find often continue through different work as well. So in choosing the right partner, these are some things that we think about. A strong partner isn't someone who just agrees to put their name on an application. The best partnerships bring something meaningful to the project. So We think about, do we have similar values and objectives? Do they bring expertise we don't have? So it could be technical expertise or community connections or cultural knowledge, accessibility expertise, specialist knowledge or experience. There's lots of different kinds of things that you might be looking for. Do they have trusted relationships with the community as well? Do they strengthen accessibility and inclusion? And can they contribute meaningfully? So some things we avoid, last minute partnerships where you can. So sometimes you do need a last minute partnership, and that's okay as well. But kind of like building, even having organizations that you know that you have good relationships with that you can call on when you're putting a grant application together. That token involvement. So, like I mentioned, not just having a name on an application, but how are they meaningfully going to be involved in your project? And having unclear roles and expectations. So, when we approach people to partner with us, we try and give really clear ideas on the expectations and also kind of like what role they will play. And also talk with them about what they think the role looks like and the expectations as well and what they could bring to the project too. Consultation and co-design. So we hear the term co-design regularly. I think sometimes it's used when people mean maybe consultation or collaboration. So they're different things. Consultation is when we ask for feedback, and co-design is when we design together. So the difference between the two comes down to the level of influence that a partner or that people involved will have in the project. And co-design really involves people helping shaping decisions from the beginning. So their professional and lived experience expertise should influence things like priorities, activities, delivery, evaluation, and what success looks like in that project. So co-design is something that's really important to us at PWDA and something that we embed in all of our projects. And we're really clear about that in our grant applications and what that will look like. And so some things that we look at, some ways that we embed co-design are on the screen there. So when writing the application, I think it's really important to not just say that co-design will happen, but to show the funder what that looks like so that they can understand what you'll be doing with co-design. So some things that we do, we have advisory groups on all of our projects. You could have steering committees or co-design workshops, paid lived experience roles, and having that regular feedback and review process as well. And good practice around co-design and something that we show in our grant applications is that people will be paid for their time and expertise. So we recognize that lived experience is expertise. Building accessibility into all of our engagement activities, making sure that we're going to provide appropriate support and information, and also explain how input will influence decisions. I think it's really important. And a big part of co-design is making sure that people involved know how their input is going to influence the project as well. A big one that we think about, and this one can be tricky, but when you're doing a grant application, including accessibility into your grant application is really important. So build it into the budget from the start. And we think about three different areas. So the first one there is accessible participation. So that's interpreting, captioning, easy read. It could be transport or support people and accessible venues. So you won't know exactly when you're writing the grant application, you may not know exactly what that amount will be. So we allow a certain amount. So say we have an advisory group. I'll give you an example. If we're going to have an advisory group made up of six people, and we're going to have 12 meetings across the course of the project, we'll allow a certain amount of money for each meeting, depending on the project and what it is. But we'll make sure that we build that in to each meeting, for example. The second one is that co-design and lived experience. So payment for time, preparation, facilitation, support, and accessible engagement. So again, if we take that advisory group and we have six people, we will include in the grant application the payment for their time and preparation as well. And that will be a line item in our budget. And the last one there is inclusive employment. And this may not be something that you put in your grant application, but this is something to consider about from a resourcing perspective. So grant opportunities do open up opportunities for employment. then I think it's worth thinking about whether you have accessible recruitment and you have workplace adjustments, assistive tech, or flexible work arrangements as well, and having that set up from the start. Yeah, there's no, I guess, universal percentage that we use because it can requirements can vary between projects. So rather than allocating a kind of generic figure for each project, we think carefully about who will be participating and what supports they might require. You can seek quotes as well wherever possible. So you might seek quotes for things like Auslan interpretation or captioning and easy read. We'll often put easy read in, so we get a quote for easy read, and depending on what resources we're going to develop in the project, we'll put a budget in for easy read for those resources as well. Accessibility isn't an add-on, it's part of good project design, and I'm sure everyone's across that and agrees. But yeah, it's really important to include that at the start and to put that in the budgets as well. So, some key takeaways from me. I think strong applications are built on that strategic thinking. So, where you can, aligning those projects to your priorities and your values and community need as well, having that clear community need, having strong partnerships and keeping those going, and thinking about future as well. Using genuine co-design is really important, and showing that in your applications, making sure that you are including accessibility and inclusion in your applications as well, and showing long-term impact. So when you're thinking about your opportunity, thinking about what exists beyond the grant period as well. And I think when you have these foundations in place, writing the application can become much easier. And in the spirit of collaboration, would love to hear from anyone if you do have any more questions, or anyone wants to collaborate. Really, really happy. There's some contact details there. You can reach me at that training@pwd.org.au email, and there's some numbers there as well. And thank you so much.
Okay, over to you, Sue.
Sue speaking. Hello, everybody. I'll just share my slides. I want to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of joining from the lands that we're joining from today and pay my respects to elders past and present. My name is Sue Tape, and I'm the Deputy CEO and Head of Evidence to Action at the National Disability Research Partnership, or NDRP. In a session about grant writing, the acknowledgement of First Nations people is also very important because funding decisions are never neutral. They reflect whose knowledge is valued, whose priorities are recognised, and whose voices are heard. And good grant practice should make space for First Nations leadership, genuine partnership, and approaches that are grounded in community, equity, and self-determination. And we would like to think that the NDRP is working hard on achieving these goals as well. So, who is the NDRP? I come to this conversation wearing a couple of hats today, while representing the NDRP. But before that, I was spent many years in disability advocacy, particularly with children and young people with Disability Australia. And one of the things that I've learnt is that grant writing can sometimes feel like a mystery. You spend days or weeks preparing an application, you press submit, and then you wonder what happened behind closed doors. So today I want to pull back the curtain a little bit. At the NDRP, we are knee-deep at the moment in assessing our 2026 disability applications, funding round applications. But all up, we have assessed exactly 417 applications and worked with people with disability, researchers, advocacy organisations, and community groups across Australia. And those 417 have been since we became an independent organisation in 2024. The good news is that the strong grant applications are rarely about having the fanciest language or the biggest organisation. They're usually about having a clear idea, strong partnerships, a genuine need and a practical plan. So I'll share some of the common things that we have seen in successful applications and also some of the mistakes that regularly trip people up. Our guiding principles. So, what is the NDRP and what do we fund? The NDRP was established because we know too much about disability research has historically been done about people with disability rather than with people with disability. And our role is to support disability-led and inclusive research that can improve policy, services, and community outcomes. So, we fund projects, we build research capability, and we help mobilize evidence into action. So, what makes us a useful example for this discussion is that we've, as I said, we've recently run national funding rounds and we've seen a huge range of applications from universities, advocacy organizations, community groups, and people with disability. So, I wanted to talk to you about the hints that we have about what a strong application looks like. So, on the screen, there are three general areas where we talk about what a strong application looks like. So, assemble a team, true co-design, and respond to the criteria. And I'll explain each of these. So, when people ask me what a strong application looks like, they're often expecting me to talk about academic language, complicated methodology, or having a large organization behind you. So, in reality, most strong applications get these three things right. So, first of all, they put the team together, so assembling the right team. No, for the grants that we're talking about, no single organization has to do everything. Because no single organization can do everything. So strong applications bring together complementary strengths. And that's why it's a pie chart. It's not a hierarchy. It's a pie chart with four different sections and arrows that connect the four different parts. And on the left-hand side of the pie chart is about organizations, and the right-hand side of the pie chart is about people. And recognizing that you need both. So, you might have an advocacy organization that understands the issue and the community, and researchers may bring technical expertise. People with disability bring lived experience and leadership, and an organization willing to administer the funding. So, assessors also aren't looking for the biggest team, they're looking for the right team. And they're looking for a team that has brought themselves together before they write the application. So, second, I'm going to move into the middle of the diagram, and it talks about co-design. And I know Simone mentioned this as well, and this is really important to be demonstrated in grants. So, demonstrating true co-design. So, at the NDRP, we're interested in research by and with people with disability, not simply about people with disability. So that means that people with disability are involved in shaping the idea, making decisions, identifying priorities, interpreting findings, and helping determine what happens next. So that co-design, as it shows on the screen, comes down to three things. So, mutuality, everyone has something valuable to contribute. Shared power, so decisions are made together. And fair resources, and Simone touched on this as well. People are properly paid and supported to participate. So, when we review applications, we can usually tell the difference between co-design that has happened and co-design that has been promised. And it's quite obvious when you're looking for it. So, I'm going to move on to the third part of this slide on the screen. So, respond to the criteria. And the one that you've got on there at the moment is the five criteria and the weighting that currently applies to our 2026 funding to give you an idea of the sorts of things that we ask people to respond to in applications. So, it sounds obvious, but it is one of the most common reasons that applications lose marks. Every funding program tells you exactly what it is looking for via its assessment criteria. So, for example, in NDRP applications, we assess relevance and potential impact, research quality, leadership and inclusion of people with disability, capacity to deliver, and risk and value for money. So, the strongest applications treat these criteria as a checklist and make it easier for assessors to find evidence against each one. So, a useful tip is to imagine me or an assessor has 20 applications to read through, score, and comment on in that day. So don't make them hunt for your strengths, signpost them clearly. So if I had to summarize this one slide, in essence, it would be this. The strongest applications aren't usually the most sophisticated. They're the applications that bring together the right people, share power genuinely, and clearly answer the questions being asked. So, what assessors look for? So, people are often expecting a secret formula, and the reality is much simpler. Most assessors are trying to answer five questions. And these five questions are on the screen. So, first of all, is there a genuine need? Why this issue? Why now? What evidence tells us that this matters? And when we say evidence, we don't necessarily put any value on qualitative versus quantitative when you're applying for a grant. Tell us what you know. Tell us what you've been told. Explain to us why this is an issue. Yes, you can cite other reports, but if this is what matters to your community, tell us about that. Second of all, is the proposal clear? Can we quickly understand what you're trying to do, who is involved, and what success looks like? Third, are the right people involved? So, do the partnerships make sense? Are people with disability genuinely involved in leadership and decision making? Is lived experience embedded throughout the project, or has it been added at the last minute? Fourth, can the project realistically be delivered? Do the activities, the timeline, the budget, and the team capability all line up? Do they tell the same story or do they contradict each other? Did one person do the budget, one person did the timeline, and one person did the activities? And did they line them up? So look at how you write as well so that everything lines up and it tells the same story. And finally, will it make a difference? So what changes are going to happen because of this project? What impact could it have on policy, practice, services, or communities? So, one useful test is this. If someone unfamiliar with your work reads your application, could they explain your project back to you in 2 minutes? If they can't, the application probably needs simplifying or work to answer those five questions. As I said before, the strongest applications aren't necessarily the most sophisticated. They're usually the clearest. They bring together the right people. They answer the questions being asked, and they make it easy for assessors to understand why the project matters and how it will succeed. So, on this next slide, it's busy. And Jax has a copy of the slides and a copy of the plain text, which has all the hyperlinks that you can see on this slide. So, this is a slide of the NDRP resources that are currently publicly available to anybody and everybody. And I really encourage you to take advantage of this access to these materials. And you will find that a lot of the things we do in plain Word documents because we want you to copy and paste. We want you to use. So these resources have been developed by the NDRP and freely available. And one of the things we hear regularly is that organisations know that they want to partner, co-design and apply for funding, but they're not always sure where to start. So these resources are designed to help exactly with that. So from the I'll just talk you through what's there, what the library is. So from the left to the right, on the left-hand side, we've talked about our guiding principles and our research agenda. So this is what are we supposed to do and how are we supposed to do it? So it tells you where we're coming from. There's also just on the website, pardon me, our website, you'll find resources and videos. We also want to link you into APO Disability Research Collection. So this is free, open access, existing research organized in a way that will make sense to people who are looking for information and evidence. And we also encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter. So the middle part, which has got a grey background and a dark blue buttons, that's some of our resources that we pull together around Advocacy 101 and creating good partnerships, and then co-design, doing research from the start. And there's a range of resources in there about what it means, how to build a team. Now, a lot of these have been developed with a range of communities in mind. So they've been developed with people with disability in mind, with researchers and advocacy organisations. So as an advocacy organisation, you will read some of that and say, yes, but that's because it's aimed at researchers so that they reach out to you. But you could share those with researchers and say, this is how we like to be engaged with. So the other thing that's on that slide is on the right-hand side are nine buttons, which are links to our YouTube playlists where we have videos both from events that we've held and videos that we've created. There's a handful of short explainers like what is advocacy, what is co-design, talking about evidence to action, how to impact policy. And then we've also at the bottom four, you'll see some of our research agenda topics in more detail, and also our most recent event around disability data and what it means to do projects using disability data. So I would highly recommend exploring. Please share. All the videos are captioned. There are Auslan interpreted videos for a lot of them. And if there's not Auslan, there are definitely captions, and there's also plain text documents that go with all of this. So we're always growing our library of events, videos, topics, resources, etc. If there's one message that I can leave you with today, it's that successful grant applications don't start with the form. They start with relationships, clear purpose, and meaningful involvement of people with disabilities. So these resources are designed to help you build those foundations before the funding opportunity even arrives. So preemptive work, preemptive organisation and development for you and your teams. So everything on this slide is free and designed to help organisations strengthen those partnerships, the co-design, and also the potential impact. I'd really encourage you to take advantage of it. Please don't reinvent the wheel. Copy and paste is your friend. And if it's a resource that you find helpful, you can acknowledge us, but we're not interested in citations or acknowledgement. But if you want to share it with other people and tell them where you got it from and that there's other stuff there, we'd actively encourage you to do that. So just this last slide is how to get in contact with us. So we're on Facebook and LinkedIn. You can email us, phone us, there's an SMS only number. And you can subscribe to our newsletter as well, which will get you access, easy access to the new resources as they come up. But check out our website as well. I want to say thank you to Jax for including us in an event like this. Jess and I are always looking for opportunities to share what we're up to. So happy to talk to people more, as Simone said, reach out to us or happy to take questions, but I'll stop sharing my slides. And we've shared with Jax the slides and the plain text Word document of the slides, which includes the link. So please feel free to share with your teams. And people that you hope that they'll find helpful.
Thank you so much, Sue. That was so super helpful, and really clear as well. I'm not seeing any questions coming through just yet. I guess I had a question, and I think perhaps you explained it in some of the links that I'm going to share around on that last slide as well. But where you talked about, a good application really starts with building those relationships, and Simone talked about this as well. Before you even get to the point of writing the application, I wondered if you wanted to talk about, like how people can do some of that forward thinking. Because I think I'll speak for myself. I think often in organizations we can all be a bit time poor, right? And so we see an opportunity come up that we think is going to be a great fit, and we try and connect with those organizations and get those letters of support and do all that work. But yeah, I liked this idea of the relationship building process kind of being an ongoing thing that you're doing as an organization, and then you're also looking for the opportunities to get funding. Did you want to share a little bit more about that?
Sue speaking, happy to. So one of the things that I've seen in the last few months in particular, as we're encouraging people to build those relationships. So I can say this many times, and as you say, okay, that's lovely, Sue. How do I do that? So one of the things that I find most helpful is LinkedIn. Because LinkedIn is where people go to share their expertise and where they go to share what's important for them and the issues that their work is, whether they are in government, whether they are in research, whether they are in advocacy. That's the place where you see what matters to them. And that's where I kind of, and I need to be careful about my language here, a target list of people to create relationships or to read what they say and how they say it. And that's where I can find out more about their values and what they're trying to achieve. So that's where I kind of do the values test as to how people write things, how they refer to people with disability, how they refer to people who are facing these issues and reference communities. That's where I get value signals from. And then I also then can follow the trail of where do they write? Do they write in the conversation or do they share their articles that are all behind a closed paywall, which kind of sends me some other signals as well. So I look for signals like that as to, okay, and I'll be honest, I am very comfortable in doing the cold calls. So whether that be an email or picking up the phone and saying, I'm thinking about doing this, I would love your opinion. I haven't started. Do you think I'm on the right track? That's the stuff I'd be encouraging you to do. Yes, it is scary. Yes, it is sometimes hard to get through. I call them the bouncers. So the people that are the front of office, the people that answer the phone, I obviously don't call them bouncers to their faces. It is sometimes hard to get through. But it is about signaling your intention. So I have an idea. I would like to do some work in this space. I wondered whether there would be somebody in your team that could talk about what you're doing in this space. And it doesn't always have to be the most senior person in the organization. Sometimes it's great to develop relationships with people who are doing the groundwork, the people who are answering the phones and taking the queries from people. They have amazing insights as to what the issues are and who's doing work because they're fielding those same calls. So cultivating those relationships, any in-person event that you go to, and I'm possibly not the best at this, is during the break time, sometimes we have to pull ourselves out of that place where we just want to have a coffee and sit in the corner and not talk to anyone else. But finding maybe one person that you haven't ever met and that you want to understand who they are and what they do. And it's amazing how just that listening will create a great relationship that you can utilize. And there's a lot of give and take in this, and that's what partnerships are. They're give and take. So recognize what you can give them, and yes, what you want to take from them, and that's life. So it is strategic, it is transactional, but they're probably thinking the same thing. They may not use the same words, but they're thinking about, okay, Jax might be thinking, yep, that's, I want to have this conversation with Sue because I want to find out when her next funding round is coming and can we apply for it. That's where Jax is coming from. And Jax knows that I want better research done by people with disability. So Jax already knows that. So we're having a conversation with a shared understanding, and you can go deeper on an issue then. So in-person events, have that conversation, even if it's only one. Then the other thing, sorry, last thing, Jax,
I'm
last thing I
good.
promise, is if you go to an event where the chat is open and you can chat with other people, introduce yourself, say why you're there and what you want, and people will see you and they will remember. Thanks.
Yeah, no, amazing, amazing advice, and it makes me think I should really update my LinkedIn. Simone, I'd love to bring you in, and I particularly loved some of the questions you had in your presentations. They were really clear to get people to think, and also the difference between good co-design and collaboration, and what the kind of differences are. How do we get organizations and also government to really understand the importance of a good co-design process that's actually meaningful for people with disabilities? And also feel free to say what you're going to say when you put your hand up as well.
No worries. Thanks, Jack. Simone speaking. I wanted to add LinkedIn. Sue is so good. I had someone reach out to me on LinkedIn. It happens a bit, but I had someone the other day who said, "Hey, I just want to tell you a little bit about what we do and see what you do." And I met with him and we had a great chat. And there's no grant application or opportunity yet. But he said to me, "If there's ever anything that comes up, please call me. We'd love to work with you." And that's just someone now who I've built a relationship with. And I said to him, "We'll stay in touch. I'll send you things." The other thing I wanted to mention, though, is using the relationships you've made to help you foster new relationships as well is really good too. So when you make good relationships with someone, we have many times reached out to that person, organization, and said, "Hey, can you put us in touch with an org or a person who focuses on this because this is what we're looking at?" And using their networks, and then you develop this really beautiful kind of like shared network. So yeah, lean in on the net on the connections that you already have as well, and get them to introduce you to new people too. I'm so sorry, Jax, I've forgotten the question. How do we get people to see genuine co-design? So I actually spoke on a panel recently about co-design, and something that was really interesting that came up, I was suggesting that we do put grant applications in, but true co-design means that we have people involved at the start, but that what we've actually submitted and what we've actually said we would do could likely change. And I think that that needs to be okay as well. Like, you need to have a relationship. And I've got to say that with the funders that have funded our projects, we've had such good relationships, and they've actually been so open to us coming and saying, "Hey, we're going to do a slight pivot here because this is what we have found through co-design. Like, through these advisory groups, through our steering committees, we've found that this needs to change and pivot." And I found that people are often really open to that because that is genuine co-design. Like, co-design means that people are responsible for shaping how things look. and how things might change. So I think I've had really positive experiences with that. I'm not sure if others have, but I've found that to be great. And we say that in our applications that we will have an advisory group, and like I mentioned, that this is what they will contribute to, and this is how this is how things might change, for example, or the project might look. So yeah, I hope that answered the question, but yeah.
Yeah, awesome. It really did. And I think, yeah, having that flexibility built in to the grant application, that is a key part of co-design. And I think, yeah, we should be able to work flexibly, as you said, based on what, folks with disabilities that we're engaging with, what we're actually saying we want and need as part of that co-design process.
Yeah,
I
and
was
you might not
also,
have that at the top.
yeah.
You might not have that when
Yeah.
you're putting your grant application in. So I think, funders having that flexibility to once you get going, it might look a little bit different. So yeah, agreed. Sorry, I cut you
Yeah,
off.
yeah. And I
Yeah.
wondered also about the sustainability or the long-term kind of reach of funding and of grant applications, like having outputs or outcomes that live beyond the scope of the actual funding itself, is something I know that funders kind of look for. How do you build in the time and space to really co-design those kind of resources or outcomes and make sure that, you're producing something that speaks to community need, but also is going to be able to exist into the ether on the internet into the future and kind of remain relevant and useful. Do you have any comments around that?
Yeah, so we, I guess maybe it's just from experience, but what we do is, so I'll give you an example. So for example, one of our the project I mentioned before, we're developing an e-learning around healthy relationships. So that will obviously exist long past the funding has been given. The reason why the funding was very important for that is because we also wanted to make that accessible free to our members as well, so that we had the funding to build it. We're not having to cover that in that sense, if that makes sense. So with that, we kind of worked out, well, how many hours, how much time do we think we need to dedicate to the advisory group being involved in building that e-learning? So how that's working is that that's being developed with a subject matter expert in a partnership, but then the advisory group access that e-learning, and they provide their feedback and suggestions, and they shape what that looks like as well. And then we build in testing. So after it's been with the advisory group, then it will actually be tested as well. And then that's when we release it, and we're still obviously open to feedback. But we kind of build that in so that we have like a subject matter expert, an advisory group, testing, us and our expertise, and it becomes this, whole shaped project. And we put that in the application stage. We say this is our plan, and this is how we plan to do it. It'll be X amount of meetings, X amount of hours. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Thank you. That was great. Sue, I might bring you back in if I can. Kenneth has a question in the chat around writing inclusion-focused applications, and whether you have any particular advice.
Sue speaking. Having sort of attended the PNC meetings for the last how many years, how old are my children? Numbers talk in those sorts of applications. So, the community that would be impacted by the grant, how many are there, how many are members of the college, or the school council, the money that can be saved by implementing whatever it is. So both the sort of the people numbers, the dollar numbers, and also the support that you have. So, we've had 10 people contribute to writing this grant or something like that. So numbers definitely talk. And also to the short and medium-term impact of what you're asking for money for. So, if you're looking for money to build a bike shed, it's going to be, the short term is building the bike shed for the students that are currently at school, but you can also talk about the medium and long-term impact is that, it builds a healthier school community, and it provides infrastructure that will last beyond, just the current school cohort, etc. So thinking about and being able to articulate that the money you spend now is going to have long-term impact, and the relationships as well. So making, particularly when you're writing around inclusion-focused applications, that it's more than just, say, the disability community, or the people, or the, say, students with disability, that it's also going to impact, their peers, and it's also going to have a positive influence on the families and the teaching staff, etc. So kind of build a circle of influence story for applications, and that's also, it talks about the community as well as the individuals that'll be impacted.
Yeah, great. Lovely. Just checking if there's any final questions, folks. Otherwise, we might let you go and continue on with your day. I've popped in a short 5-minute anonymous survey on how you found today's session. If you'd love to fill that out, that'd be lovely. Always open to feedback and also suggestions of future sessions that you might find helpful as disability advocates. Thank you again to our fabulous presenters and to all of you for coming along. I'll be, as I said, I'll be making this recording and the PowerPoint presentations available also as well as all the links to all the fabulous resources that we've shared today with you. Thank you so much, everyone, and see you next time.